going on, friends? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, couldn't do it alone, mi amigo, the Big Fizzy. That's rocking Perrier Lime, Kyle Filson.
That's right, folks. I'm here. Big Fizzy's in the house. Yes, I've got my Perrier Lime. I've tried this one before, but you know, I keep getting new suggestions from listeners, and I've been trying new types of sparkling water. And I'm telling you, it's really made a difference in my life. I literally have cut back on soda big time because of this. It only takes a couple days, and you just kind of get used to drinking the fizzy water. And I like it a little bit better than regular water. I'm sure it's not as healthy as regular water. The carbonation's got to be doing something.
Oh, yeah.
I think somebody sent me an article where
it's eating holes in your teeth, making you stupid.
Yeah, it does stuff to your teeth or something. But I'm not worried about it compared to all the other nonsense I eat and, you know, consume.
What I've done
sparkling
to my body
water
over
is,
the years.
Yeah, it's like the least of my worries, right? Look, you're not going to live forever, me included. I don't know why everybody always gets bummed out when somebody dies. And I'm like, well, how old were they? And they're like, oh, he was like 85. I'm like, it's a good life.
Good run,
it's
bro.
It's a good run. It's a good run, like 150 bro. Years ago, you were old if you lived to 34. Right?
We're not all meant to live forever. That's the way this is.
So try the sparkling water. It's Big Fizzy. That's not F-I-Z-Z-Y. It's P-H-I-Z-Z-Y. Come on, folks. Just like Filson.
Big Fizzy.
Big
I've got
Fizzy.
El Orange.
Actually, I stole that name from... there was a rapper somewhere called Fizzy like that. And I don't remember the name.
Yeah.
He wasn't like a big time rapper. But speaking of rappers, we lost a great one.
We did lose a great one, folks. For those that you don't know, damn, it feels good to be a gangster. Bushwick Bill of the Ghetto Boys passed away.
I had no idea he was still alive. I thought he was probably killed in a drive-by years ago.
Dude, he got shot. Lost an eye.
Oh, I know he did.
All that.
Yeah. Oh, no, those photographs on their CD or album covers, those were legit photos. Those weren't photoshopped. Yes. Yeah, but Bushwick Bill finally passed away. You know, we were just coming back from the coast a couple weeks ago, and as we rolled through H-Town, as I do every time, I got to play a little Ghetto Boys just out of respect.
You got to
respect. Put respect on that name.
That's
when you,
right.
When you roll through H-Town, Space City, whatever you want to call it.
52 years old.
Yeah, man.
Pancreatic cancer is what got
him. Golly, man. That's a good, that's the one that got my grandmother.
Man, yeah, that is. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't think, there's no dodging that one.
The pancreas, I'm not even sure what function that organ does, but it seems to take people out.
It seems to put them down.
You know, maybe I should just go prematurely get that removed. Can you just take it out? I can take pills.
So. I don't know. Yeah, can I just go ahead and get that taken out now?
like your appendix.
Is it too late?
Right? Yeah. The appendix causes problems. Although,
you know, there are people right now that are like doctors and nurses are just screaming.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I know. I'm not medically trained.
You know, really?
Yeah, it's hard to believe, right?
It is. It's shocking.
Yeah, but when I'm
talking about getting our damn pancreases removed.
I could sell it on the black market. Yeah, right. I don't know how much a pancreas goes for. Not much. $50 probably.
Right. 75 at best if you got a clean. Mine'll go for about $17.32.
Mine probably looks like a prune after all the Crown Royal and stuff I've consumed over my life.
Mine probably looks like an old, like a Tony Lama. Mine looks like an old Wells Lamont work glove.
I thought you were going to say Tony Robbins for some reason. He's in all kinds of hot water.
Oh, is he?
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen that? Like Thor or five.
He's got a big face. You notice that? Like his face is big.
Well, apparently he's got big old hands and he likes to grope women with them because there's a bunch of women coming up saying that from the 80s, 90s, and the 2000s, his hands were a little too friendly.
He was a little gropey, huh?
Yeah, he's part of the Me Too movement.
That's
so
right.
He's found himself with a couple of lawsuits.
How hard is it to understand keep your hands to yourself? They teach you that in kindergarten.
I know, but
it's the first thing they tell you, right?
But he's a motivational guy. Maybe he's trying to motivate him.
Good game. Just a good game.
Yeah,
good game.
I don't know the details, but yeah.
Is that, if good gaming was, you know how many times I've been groped on the softball field for good gaming? Good game. Good game.
It's a different thing.
It's completely
right? Like
different.
If a woman slapped you on the rear end or something, you wouldn't even think anything of it.
I wouldn't. It happens to me on the reg.
You can't do that in the office.
You shouldn't.
No, of course not. But remember they used to make movies, like remember 9 to 5 with like Dolly Parton and stuff? I mean, it was all about
Dabney Coleman.
Yeah.
That dude's hilarious.
It was all about that stuff.
Okay, look.
Yeah.
I sent you a video, or a link rather, to a video. We received dozens of links to this video.
Yeah.
And for those of you that haven't seen it, do yourself a solid and just Google search like security camera and elf-like creature. Just do that. Or surveillance camera. Just do something wild like that. You won't believe what comes up for those of you that haven't seen it. If you want, I'm going to read this real quick to you, but if you want to check it out, you're going to enjoy it. But this was actually posted on NDTV. And pretty much it says that a security camera captures an elf-like creature. Now, there's over 30 million views to this video. Now, here's what happened. Yeah. It says it was filmed by Vivian Gomez, and it's her security cameras that are pointing down at her driveway. And you can see her car parked there, and it leans like it's the cameras. You can see part of the road in the background of it, you know, and all this stuff. And this creature, and this is what it says here, that a woman was left stunned when she checked her home security cameras on Sunday and found a creature resembling an elf on her driveway. Now, of course, it says it's gone massively viral. And of course, conspiracy theorists, everybody went crazy. So this is what was said. She says this. So I woke up Sunday morning. That's what she said. Instantly, I go to Johnny Cash with no way to hold my head.
Stay woke.
That didn't
Stay
hurt.
Stay woke.
It says, I saw this on my camera and I'm trying to figure it out. Now, this, she first shared this on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
another person shared it after that. And then it just started gaining, like started tweeting. People were like, check this out. So she puts it up on Facebook. She says, first, I saw the shadow walking from my front door, and then I saw this thing. Has anyone else seen this on their cameras? And she said, she added that her other two security cameras didn't even pick it up for some reason. And they go on here to say that the video, which Miss Gomez shared online, shows a creature walking up her driveway, while some in the comment section say it resembles an elf or goblin. And this is the way I lead, lean, is it says that others... many others compare it to Dobby, the house elf in Harry Potter. And if you watch the video, it looks just like Dobby. I mean, it does. It looks a taller version of Dobby. It even wrings its hands when it gets down to the end of the driveway. Now, saying all this and watching this video and watching the way it walks, here's what I don't know. I don't know enough about computer, you know, graph, or like, just let's say computer graphics are generating something like this. This video spawned me to go into YouTube and pushed me into watching a lot of CGI graphic made, like, made by private content creator, movies, 8 minute shorts, 12 minute shorts, 15 minute shorts of all of, and it's all done CGI, right?
Right.
So, and there are endless videos on YouTube. You can go and watch it. They'll have millions of views, and like the whole thing may take place, you know, in 7 or 8 minutes, like the shorts that they would show before Toy Story movie or any of those. And I was hoping to find something that would lead me towards an answer, like, oh, so if that guy can make that look like this, then surely he could build Dobby. He could make this thing, you know, and could build this video. And I'm still not sold that you can't build this with CGI. But then another part of me thinks it looks like somebody up on the roof that has, and it's a puppet. Part of me feels like it is a guy up there with all the puppetry stuff and the lines, and you just can't really see the lines in the dark and the security lighting, and he's working this thing over it, and this whole deal is just a scam. You know, it's just for fun.
Right.
It's just to pump out that way. I don't know. Of course, nobody really knows except Miss Vivian. If it was, you know, real or not, but it dang sure looks interesting. And another thing too is it, to me, it doesn't fit what we all know and what all the reports that we've covered and other people have covered and the ones we've received, it doesn't fit any one of those creatures.
It is creepy though.
It is creepy, but it doesn't fit anything like what we've discussed. So if this is, it would be almost like a one-off in the way it's built. Now, yeah, it's humanoid. It's walking. It looks like a small person. And then you can, but yeah, I would suggest you have to go check it out. It's a very, very interesting thing. And then of course that thing led to another thing. And that other thing was our buddy Lon. Shared this with, we send Lon a bunch of y'all stories. Uh-huh, y'all send us some crazy stories and really good listener stories. We'll send them to Lon. Lon, he's got them. They'll be posted up lots of times. You'll see on Phantoms and Monsters, all kinds of stuff like that. So then he sends us some wild stuff lots of times before he posts it all up. And it's very interesting things. It's wild. Well, here's one that he just recently posted, but sent to us, and it was Russian boy encounters. I want to say Alisha is how you should probably pronounce it. It looks like Leshy, but I'm going to say Alisha. It says here that I live in Russia.
Those are expensive cameras.
A Leshy, those are also good air guns. Elsa says here, it says the official religion is now Christian, but earlier there was a Slavic paganism. And in that religion, there are a lot of gods. They have, what does it say here? They have one property or work. And also it says that there are a lot of other creatures, such as the Leshy. And it says Les or Leshy. And it says Les means forest, high, H-I-Y, means live in here. Now, if you look the way it's written, it's either written L-E-S-H-Y, like Lee Shy, or they'll put an I in them. Different spellings right. of different things. So this fellow writes here that when I was young, in the summer, I lived with my grandparents' summer house and located in the countryside surrounded by pine forest, about 100 kilometers from Moscow. I was about 13 when this happened. It was a really boring summer. I had nothing to do, so I decided to make contact with some creatures of this Slavic paganism. And I would love to be able to pronounce this, and I know y'all love it, but
go on.
Yazichastvo?
Sure.
That might be the religion. Yazichastvo. I don't know. It's a cool name.
Very cool.
It's me, my grandson's name, Yazichastvo. But it says, I had that book where main gods and creatures were listed, plus, and I like how they add this, I had the internet. Failsafe. Here we go.
When?
So I did some research and found out that Lisha was the best choice because there are a lot of old forests near me. Some words about the Lisha. He is protector of the forest. He lives in here like some kind of politician and rules the forest. He can change form, make himself invisible, and turn into an old man with a white greenish beard. So we're getting back more towards this video that this woman posted. It says he can be evil and good, depends on the people, and how they treat the forest and how they act. Also, he likes presents and treats. Well, who don't? Such as tobacco, rye bread, and candy. Yep, sign me up. Here we go.
Sounds like my dad.
Right? No, it's Pop-Up, is Alicia. Says, so I took candy and I walked into the forest and found some cut trees and I placed the candy on it and I said loudly something like, and they write it in Russian, which is a crazy language to read, but it says that it translates into something like, Lisha, Lisha, I brought you some treats. Take them.
The Bobo Yaga.
The Bobo Yaga. Yes. I want to think of the one of Rick and Morty when he is the pickle man. So I stay there for a little trying to hear something, but instead I spotted some movement in the corner of my eye. I saw a darkish translucent figure to the left of me about 50 centimeters tall, and it was running behind me. While it was running, it was growing taller and taller. So I almost crapped my pants. I started running out of the forest while that figure ran over to the place where I had placed the candy. A few seconds later, I heard an explosion very loud, and it was a tree that he had probably fell to the ground. I stopped near the exit from the forest, and I stared toward that fallen tree. It fell in exactly the same place where I was standing. Now, I ran out of the forest back to my grandparents' house, locked the door, and I never went back into that forest again. Now, I have a few questions about this situation. Does anyone know what that creature is? There are some analogies outside of Western Europe. And what did I do wrong so it got so mad at me and tried to kill me? Even though they like treats, I was trying to do everything to please him. Maybe someone similar had an experience, and if so, I'd love to hear the story.
Sound like he ran into like a malevolent fae folk or something.
That's
to me.
That's exactly what it sounds like. So it brings me back to the video that we watched. I wonder if, is that thing over there messing with the cars? You remember we did stories and we've talked about goblins on aircraft, especially during the war?
Yeah, gremlins.
Yeah. What if that's like a gremlin? What if they do show up and tinker from time to time with vehicles? Whenever you're late in the morning, you're like, I didn't leave my lights on. The battery's just inexplicably dead. And maybe it's not even old enough to be dead. It's just in it. And we always chalk it up. Well, it got cold last night. Or, well, it was hot yesterday.
It was faulty.
Or something went bad in it, you know? Yeah, something obviously drained it. Yeah, no joke. Something obviously drained it. That's how a battery works, you know? But
maybe it's something paranormal.
Exactly. Maybe. Maybe they're... What if they draw energy from a battery?
Yeah, who knows?
What if that's how they can get a little sip? Like, having a battery is like us taking a Red Bull. And they go in there and just get near it and they can draw some energy.
I prefer Monster energy drinks.
That's right. Your name is Kyle. I forgot.
Yeah.
I forgot. My bad.
From time to time, we get stories from people, listeners of ours, that not only had a paranormal encounter, but they seem to have multiple paranormal encounters over their lifetime. And this is a fellow that's kind of like that. Now, when you think of New York, most people think of New York City or they think of Long Island. They don't just think about the other parts of the state, which New York State's a very large state. It's very thickly wooded. They got, you know, the Adirondack Mountains and things like that. So this took place in there. He says, hi, guys, my name is Lloyd, and I'd like to tell you about a couple of unusual things that I've encountered. First off, I will tell you I grew up on a small farm and I'm an avid outdoorsman. My family are hunters. and I'm familiar with the local wildlife. I have lived in the area called the Ridge all my life, and now I'm 43. I'm working on becoming a 35er in the Catskills, and I've done 17 peaks so far. I call the woods my home. My first story happened when I was in my mid-20s. I would take my family camping on vacation in the Catskills in Livingston Manor. On this particular day, I was taking my son fishing to a pond I'd found way back in the woods. It was about a 2-mile walk up an old logging road that was made at the turn of the century. There was a pond at the top of a series of waterfalls that had an old dam built to control water flow for the old railroad that long had been removed. There was a summer cottage on the pond that me and my son walked to and around to ask for permission to fish, but no one was there. It looked like no one had been there in a very long time. So I decided to fish from the dam at the edge of the property. We were there all afternoon and fishing was good. It was getting pretty dark when we started hearing noises in the woods across from the pond in the direction of the old cottage. They sounded like footsteps, but heavy ones. They would go for a while and stop sometimes fast, and sometimes it sounded like they were just creeping along. I thought that maybe the cottage owner was coming to chase us out of there, so I shouted, "Hello, who's there?" But I got no response. Then there was more noise from the other side now, and there was more than one. Now I'm thinking, is it a bear? Could it perhaps be a pack of coyotes? I yelled again, "Hello, who's there?" But I got no response. As I was doing this, I did hear a rock hit the ground about 20 feet from me. Now, I instantly knew that bear don't throw rocks, and it had to be someone that was messing with us. Just as I thought that, another rock, this time a big one, hit the water. Now, I know when I'm not wanted, and quickly gathered my things up and my son. I yelled out, all right, we're leaving, and we got the heck out of there. Now, I could hear the footsteps. They continued around in our direction, around the pond as we headed out, but I didn't see anything. Whatever it was, it finally stopped when we got about 100 yards down the trail. What or who it was, I still don't know. We were miles from the nearest road, and every time I yelled, no one ever answered. Whatever it was, it didn't want us in there. Now, my next story took place back when I was hiking with my sister up Wittenberg Mountain on our way to Cornell Mountain. We had made it to the summit of both Wittenberg and Cornell in about 2.5 hours, and we were on our way back when something strange happened. We had a good time, and the trail was clearly marked. I had my GPS with me also, just in case. I like to record my hikes as I go, so I can look at the average pace, elevation gain, etc. We had seen others on the trail too. Now, I can't explain it, but it took us an incredibly long time to get back down. I'm saying a really long time. We kept hiking and kept following the trail for hours, but it just kept on going. Me and my sister couldn't understand it. It took us only 2.5 hours to get up the peak, and now we were walking back down. We were already at 6.5 hours. It was like we were stuck in some kind of time loop. I kept checking my GPS and my maps, and I followed the trail marks, but it seemed like we weren't getting anywhere. We would comment to each other how long it was taking and what was going on. My GPS kept saying, just go a little farther. By the time we made it out of the woods and back to the parking lot, it had been 10 hours since we set course for home. I don't know if this was a time warp. I don't know if this was fae folk messing with us. I just can't say. My GPS showed our average pace on the way back, and it was the same as the ascent. But the mileage didn't match up, and the time didn't match up. It just seemed weird, but I really think something was going on. My last story happened when I was on my way home from work. I have about a 40-minute drive to work on Route 44 and 55 that takes me over the ridge and to a local town of Newburgh on the Hudson River. On my way home, I was approaching the ridge where 1,200-foot cliffs rise above the Hudson Valley. It was a swamp on both sides of the road. It was dark out and a clear, nice night. Up ahead about 60 feet, I saw a figure come out and cross the road. Now, I was traveling at about 55 miles an hour. What I saw looked like a shadow person. My headlights could not light it up, even though it was right in front of me. The figure was tall, walking upright on two legs. If I had to guess, I'd say it was slightly taller than 6 feet. My headlights would illuminate the road and everything around it, even the signs past it, but not the figure. It absorbed the light. It was just dark. You couldn't see through it, but it was definitely there, and it turned towards me a little as it crossed from my right to my left. I slowed when I reached the spot where I saw it, but there was nothing there. It was just the swamp on both sides of the sparsely wooded road. If something was there, it would have nowhere to hide. I firmly believe I saw a shadow person cross in front of me. Something that walks on two legs and is the size of a big human. I've never seen it there again. Anyways, keep up the good work, guys. You're my favorite podcast that I listen to. Love the show. Your friend from New York, Lloyd. So, Lloyd, thank you for sending that in, first and foremost. But yeah, the possible time slip, the thing messing with you in the woods. Remember him and his boy were just fishing, and you were reading that last story? It's like something didn't want him in the woods.
Yep.
Whatever it was. He didn't see anything, so he can't blame it on Sasquatch. Can't blame it on a shadow being or anything. But he got the intention that something, there was multiple things, didn't want him there. So they left. He did the smart thing, right?
Yeah, get out of there.
And then the shadow person, it's a story like so many people talk about. Could that be like a spirit, like, you know, an ancient Native American ghost or something crossing the road? Who knows? But I think it's cool how he said his headlights would light up everything, but not this stick figure,
yeah.
Not this black person or this being or whatever it was. It kind of absorbed the light.
And we've heard that multiple
times. Heard that many times.
Yeah. That it's just creepy. Negative. It has negative, like the light's pulled to it.
And he's had multiple encounters. This is often the case with people that have paranormal encounters, is it happens repeatedly throughout their life. You know, I think this is a kind of like a medium where some people are just, they're able to pick up on it. I have an uncle that's that way. Like, he just has bizarre things happen to him all the time. I think it's everywhere, but just some people are able to perceive it and others aren't. But what are we going to be talking about today?
We are going to be wrapping up when I started with the Morbach werewolf. There's more Morbach werewolf tales, more guys talking about working there, and just all around some really interesting stuff that we'll compile in at the end of that to wrap up when we started a few weeks ago. So let's take a quick break. We'll jump back on the backside of that music. We'll tie up some of this Morbach business. You're listening to Expand the Perspective. Dokie. I am back, y'all. I am back to pick up more on this crazy Morbach werewolf, overseas dogman style crazy stories that we were doing. I still had a lot, remember? If you remember when we left off, we'd been discussing the creature that had been seen. Some said it was a big cat. Some said it could have been a dog. You know, we don't know. I mean, of course, there is, the tale, like I discussed, of the fella that it was a werewolf there and this, that, and the other. So what I have for you now was where I'd started off or left off from the last episode was LP McCormick talking about how he was the first commander of the munition slogger Morbach in 1956. Excuse me. I wasn't paying attention. A little frog snuck in and got in my throat. So basically this is what goes down, y'all. He says here that we had moved our inventory into an area outside of the village of Morbach and that the airmen at the time were quartered nearby at Hahn Air Force Base. He says that our unit was the 73rd, 72nd ammo detail number one and our mascot. I love, remember we've discussed these animals in the military. He says that our mascot was a very old dog named Ammo P Ammunition. That's a good dog names. I love it. It says here that we had a complete service record compiled for the dog. And his record was exemplary, he says, until we arrived at Moorbach. Now, he says that deer would clear the perimeter fence and then be found deceased shortly thereafter, which is no real shocker. I mean, they get in there, but deceased shortly after, that's a little weird. Now, he goes on to say that Ammo was named as the murderer of these animals and was about to face a court-martial. He says, when I decided to investigate, well, you got to take care of your dog, man. And, of course, if you know the dog and he's never done this before, why would he do it now, right? And I'm assuming, too, that he probably wasn't just roaming wild in the middle of the night. He's hanging out. He's the mascot. He's probably, you know, sleeping beside someone's bunk, something along those lines. So he says that he had viewed the body of the most recently departed deer, and he found a .30 caliber slug in the animal's head. He said, so now Ammo was not qualified to use either the M1 or M2 carbine, so they had to dismiss the charges on the dog. Now, he says this over the protests of several airmen who said that they had to shoot the deer to put it out of its misery. Now, he goes on to say that he had reported this and that they had promptly looked into he reported the deer, gave the deer away. They started investigating more incidences with the deer. Turns out that may have just been a few of the guys back then, like he said, hunting these deer. And maybe eating these deer, because maybe what they had in the chow hall wasn't that great. So he's like, that was the only incidents that this fella had with one of the werewolves at Moorbach. So we've gotten stories of some are yes, some are no. Now there's a Master Sergeant C writes, and he says that I was stationed at Hond Air Force Base from 1986 to 1989 as an SP. Of course, we've discussed tons and tons of the SPs. He says that I was assigned as the flight chief for Charlie Flight Security, and that we posted people at Munn's site, more commonly known as Moorbach, each night. So he says, this whole time, I've been hearing these werewolf stories. He says, were they real? I have no idea. But he says, what I do know is this, that a couple of my long-timers there, who were there since 82 or 83, swore that they had seen a werewolf. And he says, so I really don't know. He goes, but they both told me the same story, that they had observed a person jump the fence, which was a standard 7-foot chain link fence with an 18-inch outrigger. I'm assuming with the outrigger is probably like what you see in a security fence, folks, when the wire hangs over on the outside. You have a 3-strand or 4-strand barbed wire that runs along those fingers that point back out so you can't crawl over. So I'm assuming when he says 18-inch, that's a pretty good size finger pointing out to the outrigger. He says when it jumped the fence, the thing took off on all fours. They also said that when the canine unit was brought in, that it was taken to the place where the werewolf jumped the fence, that the dog became extremely nervous. Now, he said, I walked the area where this happened, and it was very dimly lit. The only lighting was perimeter lighting facing towards the outside. Now, those lights were not very bright, so he said it was a bit spooky even being out there. Now, he goes on, and y'all are like this. He says, on a lighter note, the newbies who were assigned to that area were always taken to the spot where the werewolf jumped the fence and were told the story. In one occasion, one of the pranksters that they all hung out with decided to hide under some leaves. He says, when the new troop came by, that same prankster reached out from under the leaves and grabbed the young man by the leg. He said screams were heard through the night, and the sound of a round being chambered into M16s. He said, fortunately, the other cop who was there grabbed the rifle before anything crazy went happen. So the dude didn't really guess the joke was funny. But he said they never played that prank on anybody else again. So he spoke to a couple of people that had seen a humanoid something or other jump a 7-foot fence, he says, with an 18-inch, you know, barbed wire outrigger. If you're going to jump into it, you don't really want to jump into a military base, do you? Like, I still don't understand these stories, and we've covered them multiple times. What are they doing at a military base? If I'm going to jump into someplace, it's going to be someplace where there's nobody there and possibly something with cheese on it. But there, I don't even know what they're talking about. So we've got another one here, but Jake. And Jake says that I was stationed at Hahn from 82 to 84 with the 50th SPS. He said, I was, along with four others, were sent out for a security watch one night at the NATO ammo dump. So we're talking about a bunch of the ammo stuff still. He said that the five of us were watching through one pair of night vision goggles, passing them back and forth from the side of a hill on the fence line in the distance. He said, we watched what we thought was a person run to the fence, then right over, and then the person or animal ran on all fours like a large dog. He said, now, we were all shook up from this whole thing and just kind of chalked it up as a large dog. He said, now, the whole thing lasted under a minute. He said, now, I don't believe in these crazy legends and stories, but he goes, this was very unusual. So they all witnessed what they thought was a person run to the fence, jump over, and then run off on all fours. Now, I have a question about this. If you're a security officer and you and four of your friends are hanging out armed with night vision goggles, and you see somebody run towards the fence, whether it's to the fence or away from the fence. Now, what he's not saying is what size of fence. It may have just been a fence line, a standard in the field fence line. And that's what I'm going to assume it is, you know, and I know we shouldn't, but you're just looking out there at a normal fence line. Maybe you're just on watch. You got your back to the ammo dump. You're watching out over a pasture. You see this happen. Yeah, I don't think, because he doesn't go on to say that it was the 7-footer, but if so, if it's the one like the other fella described, what are you letting like werewolves jump in and out of your ammunition dump? You know, what's going on? We've all covered this. We've told you them werewolves, man, they ride bikes, you know, and they're kind of white trashy, and they may be running guns and all this stuff. You know what I'm saying? That's a werewolf. So you didn't let it jump in there in the ammo, but I'm going to go ahead and say maybe that's all he was doing was watching a field, and they say that they had seen that. Now, this one's very interesting from a fella named D, and it said that in 1988, I was the assigned security supervisor for the Wingnarf, that's nowhere close, Wingerath, some crazy one over there, munitions storage area. Although it was just on the other side of the village, we called it Moorbach. There you go. It says that we were assigned to Hahn Air Force Base and not Moorbach. Moorbach isn't even a base. It's just a town down the road on the B-327. And as we drove through, and he keeps saying it's Wingerath or Wingerath, I was driving the bus. Some of the guys noticed that the candle in the shrine was not lit and that there was a full moon. Now, we all knew of the local legend, and we sort of just laughed about it. And when we came on duty, my patrols would do their sweep of the assigned sector. As I was in the security trailer with the security controller, the radio dispatch, I was reading the previous shift logs, and one of my foot patrols found three dead deer within one of the wooded areas and radioed us. Now, when I arrived on scene, I noticed that their throats were damaged and two had their entrails and hindquarters eaten along with what appeared to be their internal organs, like their liver and their heart. Now, we did have wild boar in and out of the area, and these were the small barking species of deer. Now, we placed a call to the local forest Meister, so he could remove the carcasses. I went back to the security control trailer to the phone and the base on the incident. And after that, I radioed all patrols for an area briefing at control. As the patrols rolled in, we heard a low-level but loud growl howl coming from the direction of our only alarmed structures to the west of our location. So I radioed the foot patrol assigned to that area, since they were still en route. And as I did, they came running out of the darkness yelling, "Did you guys hear that?" And about that time, it howled again, low, deep, long, and loud. It sounded like it was within our fence line. I called the entry control point to see if they had permitted any canine patrols in the area. They said no, and also reported the howling. One of the guys said, "What if it's the werewolf?" And we all kind of giggled, but then it howled again. Now, this time from the center of the site, but this howl was unreal. It's hard to describe, but it vibrated your insides. So I called the base, and I updated them that we had a breach of some kind of animal. Sounded like a large dog or possibly a wild animal. They stated that the Forestmeister had been called and was on his way. I asked the patrols if they wanted me to turn on the lighting of the area, and they said no. That area lighting usually made matters worse since they cast too many shadows and ruined your night vision. So as it was with the full moon, we could see pretty good. I issued night vision scopes to two of the patrol leaders. They mounted on the M16s. I informed them that they did not have permission to lock and load. Since it was peacetime, during the Cold War, we carried our weapons with a loaded magazine, weapon on safed, and no round in the chamber. And when it was about to get noisy, lock and load meant to charge your weapon, or put a round in the chamber and get ready to rock and roll. I took one of the foot patrols with me. I probably should stop there. Whenever it says it's about to get noisy, that's exactly what it means for those that don't know. If that's nothing, it means gunfire. There's going to be gunplay, getting noisy. So it says, I took on one of the foot patrols with me, of course, strength in numbers, he says, and headed to the perimeter in case it tried to circle my guys. And I went by the fallen deer to show the patrol. When we got there, I noticed that the third deer had also been snacked on. So I immediately called all the patrols. I had them come back, or that it had come back, rather, and fed on this third deer. Now, about that time, one of the mounted patrols in the vehicle had made contact and was pursuing a large, dark canine. We ran in a circular route as to try to outflank whatever it was that they were chasing. The entry gate radioed me saying that our canine patrol had arrived. I had them dispatched to the western fence line since that's where we were all going. The pursuing patrol radioed that it was turning towards the command trailer. But here's the funny part. Alpha Control radioed that he was locking down and wasn't opening the door till daylight. So I took the foot patrol and headed to the fence line since we had two patrols going to main control. The canine patrol was already there, and I dispatched him to the alarmed structures to stand by. I did this since they were between control and the perimeter fence. When we got to the fence, I put one of the guys near the fence line, and I, with the patrol leader, headed to a small hill to overwatch his position. I asked for status reports because I could hear a lot of yelling, and they said that it was coming towards us. So I radioed control to turn on our sector's lighting. Our area was mostly open, with trees on the right side. We switched off our scopes, and in that instant, we reached to turn off the units. Our guy on the fence started screaming. We turned in time to see a huge dark mass clear our 9-foot fence. Now, it faded quickly from our perimeter lighting into the darkness. I asked for the area lighting to be turned off. I walked further up the hill and switched on my night vision. I looked in the direction that it had run. Since the magnification was weak, I really didn't expect to see anything. Then I saw it. It was leaned up against a tree looking at us on its hind legs, breathing heavily. I yelled, 2 o'clock, 200 meters. Then it turned and faded into the trees. Only one other patrol leader saw it. Now, it was now 2:30 a.m. The Forestmeister had arrived at the entry gate. I had him sign in and I asked the canine unit to foot patrol the fence, but the dog had retreated to his kennel and would not come out. So I put all units back on active patrol and to remain extra vigilant. Now, as I escorted the Forestmeister to the dead deer, I explained what had happened. He listened carefully and seemed to be absorbing it all in. He took pictures of the deer for records, then bagged their bodies. He said that it didn't appear to be the work of a wild boar. It had all the markings of a wolf attack. He said wolves usually don't kill their prey. They usually die from shock and blood loss. That they would knock it down and start eating the hindquarters with the animal still alive. This one killed them, then ate them, as evidenced by the neck injuries. I asked if they could jump a 9-foot fence, and he said this one could and laughed. So the guys were all jazzed up, to say the least, and we had a group meeting around 4 a.m. I said that I need written reports by the shifts at 6:30, so to take turns patrolling. So Alpha 2 at the command trailer opened his door, even though it was still dark out. And I remember sitting there sipping some coffee saying, are they going to believe this? And he said that we were all going to piss in the bottle for this one. And he says that meant, of course, urine analysis to see if we were on drugs, and we all laughed about it. When we got back to the armory, I was pulled aside by my flight chief and shift commander, and I briefed them on what had happened. My flight chief asked me to take home the statements and proofread them first, then turn them in before guard mount. When I arrived, I noticed that the roster had been amended. We were all going back to Moorbach. It was very rare to have the same patrol twice, let alone the entire area. On the bus ride out there, we were pretty much quiet. I stopped the bus at the altar to make sure the candle were lit and that the old guy was awake. Gave me the thumbs up. The flight chief showed up around midnight, and we had this chat. He said we had two choices. We could turn in the statements but omit the werewolf references, or shred the statements and have me write in the logbook that a wild animal had killed some deer in the wooded area behind the ammo building and that the Forestmeister had been dispatched. End of story. As we all looked at each other, he stated that our PRP would be called into question. PRP is a program that enables us to work around nuclear resources. To lose your PRP cast a dark cloud over you. Plus, you got the crap details while you were being reevaluated. Took up to 45 days to be reevaluated, so we opted for the latter. Now, some of us choose not to talk about it, but obviously some did, and it really happened. And it wasn't some story to scare the Jeeps. Jeeps are the new guys or the rookies. Says, was it a werewolf? Was it an endangered European wolf? Was it a coincidence that the candle was out that night on a full moon? Says, you decide. As for me, I'll say this. The above statement is true to the best of my knowledge. So I don't know what... I know it's insane, that story, but we can't really be surprised that the military would want to put a hold on this, would want to, if there was anything over there. I like the fact that we've got conflicting stories from different people around the same times that served in that area. Some saw nothing. Some believes it might have been a big cat. Some say that the wolves, endangered European wolves, this side or the other. Who knows, right? Who knows what it could possibly be? But it was some fun stories. Now, I want to leave you with this. There is an old book from the 1890s, a German book called Der Werewolf. And in one part of it, the two guys, Knopp and Asmus, are the authors of these books, or this book. And anyway, this is a really interesting thing. I want to read about what they write about the werewolf over there. Now, you got to imagine, of course, this is, you know, quite a few years before, but, you know, we have this German history. So it says that by using a so-called wolf strap, any person could transform himself into a werewolf. Whoever fastened such a strap around himself would turn into a wolf. If someone called out the name of a person who had turned himself into a wolf, that person would regain his human form. In earlier times, there were a great many such straps, but today, along with the wolves, they seem to have been banned to Russia. A wolf strap was a gift from the devil. A person who possessed such a strap could not get rid of it, however much he wanted to. Anyone who accepted a wolf strap also had entered into a brotherhood with the devil, surrendering body and soul unto him. If real wolves were feared in earlier times, werewolves were feared all the more. A real wolf could be shot dead or lured into a so-called wolf pit, where it would perish from hunger. However, a werewolf could not be brought down with a rifle bullet, nor would ever fall into a wolf pit. Now, the reader will perhaps ask, what is the use of running around as a werewolf? This was not done for no good reason. When the pantries and meat containers were empty, one would only have to fasten on the wolf strap, run off as a wolf, seek out a fat sheep that was wandering off towards the edge of the woods, creep towards it, seize it, and drag it into the woods. In the evening, one could bring it home without anyone noticing. Boy, that story right there, you could add so much more to that. That means that goes to a lot of things. And you don't even have to turn into a werewolf. And it says, or the werewolf would know when a peasant was going through the woods with a lot of money, and he would ambush him, rob him, and then run across the field with the booty, it says. Ooh, so, well, just alluded to it earlier in the sentence before. In earlier times, after the horses had been unhitched from a wagon or plow, they would be driven out to a community pasture where they would be watched until morning by two herdsmen. Even colts were put out for the night and people took turns watching them. Now, once it happened that one of the two herdsmen had a wolf strap, after both herdsmen had kept watch for several hours, they got sleepy and laid their heads down. The first one, however, who had heard that his companion possessed a wolf strap, only pretended to be asleep. And the other one thought that he was indeed sleeping, and he would quickly fasten the strap around himself and ran off as a wolf. The other one got up and saw how his companion ran up to a colt, attacked, and devoured it. After this happened, the wolf man came back and lay down, and towards the morning they both awoke. The werewolf man was rolling around on the ground and groaning loudly. The other one asked him what was wrong, and he said that he had a horrible stomachache. To this, the first one said, the devil himself would have a stomachache if he had eaten an entire colt at one time. And the werewolf asked him to say nothing about what happened. He kept silent about it for a long time, but later he did tell me about it, and now I too feel free to tell you about it, because both men have been dead for a long time. So that is, I guess the way to wrap up is, are there wolf straps out there? If so, were these wolf straps maybe handed down through the families? Maybe it was something that father to son or grandfather to grandson. Could it have been one of those things that they used, like we said, in the German military? We talked about the werewolves and the men getting under attack. Could these wolf straps be something that maybe old German military had? If not, I'm going to go ahead and say that I'm going to copyright that idea for a great movie about old World War II German soldiers with wolf straps in their packs and would just strap them on and turn into wolves and take off and fight the Allies that way. That would be really, really cool. Either way, it's some pretty wild stories that were anything cool with werewolves. So I hope you enjoyed them. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll go ahead and chit-chat some more. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
More Bach werewolfing.
More werewolf stories, right?
It all takes place down in that area. And like we've talked about, something about the dark forests of Germany, it just make you want to believe it.
I agree with you 100%. Something about vampires always makes in Transylvania, well, first of all, or Hungary or something.
Anything taking place in Europe like that, with, like you said, vampires, werewolves, I just feel like it fits.
You know,
like when you start talking about Bigfoot's American, I get it. It's here. But when you start talking about like werewolves, and I'm like, yeah, over there, baby. That, and especially like Germany. And I mean, you and I have discussed it multiple times about just some of the creepy woods and the old mountains. And just like for some reason, the folklore of trolls and Norway go hand in hand.
Yeah,
like
I know,
would,
right?
Think they would, you're like, yeah, they would be here.
Troll Hunters, great movie.
Oh, I do. I love that. I love that. You know,
speaking of vampires and stuff, you've seen the photographs where they exhume a body.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's been staked.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times they're like iron staked.
Yeah.
Or like in a cage where it looks like they had it caged. Turns out, somebody forwarded this article to me weeks ago, and I just keep forgetting to bring it up. But they found out a lot of that is nothing to do with vampirism. That back in the day, when people were trying to learn about the human body, stealing bodies to do medical experiments on was a common thing. And they would stake the bodies down so that somebody wouldn't steal your grandpappy and cut him up for
mess, because they were so, what were those? What were they called?
You know what I'm talking about? The people that would steal bodies and sell them
is it a ghoul? Is that where the name ghoul came from?
I don't know.
There's a term that come from that time, from body snatching.
Yes.
In olden Europe, where they would, like you're talking about, what do they do that in? I know they do it in Gangs of New York. They do it in that. Leonardo takes a body, but it's already a dead guy. But there is it Penny Dreadful? I think it's Penny Dreadful, where there's dudes that are digging up the bodies.
But that happened a lot. You know, like in The Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
Yes.
Where they're like having tied up. That's the thing. They would steal those bodies, and the doctors would, like a theater, would stand around and watch them remove a pancreas, you know, like we were talking about earlier.
There was just no regard for the dead. Probably because it was...
It's morbid, but they had to, right?
Well, you have to think about this too. Back then, how many people saw dead bodies. It happened all the time.
All the time, yeah.
How many people today have, there's people who have gone their entire life and never seen dead bodies.
Yeah, I think so, a lot of people don't.
There's a lot of, yeah, and not been involved in it. So there's a lot of that. Back then, life and death was just like it is when you go to the grocery store. That's just the way things
are. It's still
were.
That way in parts of the world. Luckily, we live in America, and it's very
people are out of touch with it, extremely out of touch
with it. Like, oh, look, there's a sale at Banana Republic, or, I've got to go down here and get a Slurpee.
You're exactly
right. You never
see
a dead person.
Well, before we wrap this up, I have one more story I want to share with y'all about Lancashire. There's no N in there. Lancashire. It's got to be. Yeah. It's got to be. It's like Cashire. Lancashire. There we go. Yeah, all right. We're going with that. Anyway, there was a hellhound spotted over there back in 2015. A fella writes in and says, I was talking to an old school friend's mother. They were farmers in the town of Kirkham in Lancashire. And she told me a story of the time that she saw a strange animal at the bottom of one of her fields. In the summertime, every evening, she would walk the fields with her black lab. And at the time, her son had put out a couple of garden chairs under a tree for her to sit on. These were placed in the last field that she would walk in. The dog would sniff and run around, you know, like the dog does. And so she would sit there and just enjoy the evening, you know, in the afternoon. So it says one evening, she had her usual walk with her pup. And they got to the last field and they were sitting down and she was there just enjoying herself. And she says at the very bottom of the field that looks back onto the railway lines, she saw a large animal. So I asked her, I said, well, what did it look like? And she said, well, what she described was a large, dark brown or black animal about the size of a bull. Yeah, mm-hmm. A bull, but it was looked more like a dog, built like a dog. It was walking on all fours from right to left, keeping very close to the fence which separated her land and the railway cutting. Now, she says that she's not sure if it was on her side of the fence or the railway side. So I asked her if it was a wild boar or deer or just a large dog. And the answer was a definite no. This lady had been around animals and the farmyard her entire life. Says, I'm pretty sure she knows what she saw, and it was none of the animals that I mentioned.
Hmm.
So Leon had sent that in. So you look at this.
Yeah.
There's another giant hell. Something about big black dogs, big black cats over there that in an area of the world that they should not be.
Yeah, that's
exactly
right.
But yet we see them. And it... and. I'm drawing a blank, but you remember we did the story of the wolves in the wartime, and
yes.
They had them. It does it not feel like that area? Maybe they draw. That's the negative energy. There was so much over there for some reason. Maybe that's just like we have skinwalkers here.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe the skinwalkers here were drawn from the negative energy of the Native American and the Americans, you know, fighting the Europeans and all, you know, back and forth. And there's been so much war here. Well, maybe over there, instead of it being skinwalkers, it's hellhounds that draws from that negative energy. And then you listen to the Morbach werewolf, and then they got there's a bunch of wild stuff that goes on where, and it's funny. It's almost like some of the stories that I covered, guys are like, man, I didn't see anything. We used to make jokes about it. And other guys are like, I was there like at this time. So the years, some overlap and some are the same. And some guys have heard stories and saw stuff and some guys didn't. And it makes me wonder, too, again, if you're putting that energy out there and you're believing, do you create like a tulpa of a werewolf or something that's there?
I think so. If you start really dwelling on it a lot, I think you can manifest things. That's why, you know. It's not good to sit in your room and
read
the Necronomicon or,
that's right.
or listen to Dead Horse. I mean, you need to get out, get some sunshine, get some vitamin D.
That's why I quit listening to all the, I literally stopped and I've been like 3 months free or 4 months free of listening to murder and crime podcasts. I had to stop.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I got, and I started catching myself. I'm like, dude, I'm getting... It's not that I didn't enjoy it. It was the fact that you start looking at everybody like, are you a criminal? Are you, you know what I mean? It's... I guess if you were in law enforcement and had a lot of negative, which I guess most of them are, but, you know, the majority of it is negative when you're dealing with people lying to you all the time in law enforcement.
Yeah, yeah.
You start instantly thinking the worst of people because that's what you see out of people all the time. Well, when you listen to it and it's going in your ears, it started driving me that way where I'm like, nope, I'm done. I'm done with it. So I've taken a sabbatical.
Yeah, well, I just saw it. They just arrested us. They caught a serial killer in Dallas.
Oh, that's great.
This last week.
That's great.
So they actually caught one.
Good.
Lots of times they don't catch them. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad they got one. Well, folks, we had a great time today.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to wrap this little jewel up. On the next Elite episode, I'm going to be talking about the conspiracy of John Wilkes Booth. And I don't mean of what he done. I'm talking about where he ended up and that he didn't die.
That sounds really cool. Yeah. If you got any stories of your own you would like to share with me and Cam, email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. You can follow us on all forms of social media. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Get a good feeling, yeah.